This is Darcy Killeen with the UW Archives Oral History Project. I'm sitting here at Isthmus Architects with Charlie Quagliano and Emily Men. Today is Wednesday, March 14th. So go ahead, Emily.
Charlie, I was hoping you could talk about your personal background, starting with your education. Could you describe your education?
Sure. I did 4 years of architecture school at Kent State University. Got my Bachelor of Science in Architecture there. Mm-hmm. And I did one semester at Rosary Graduate College in Florence, and with an emphasis on history. And then did my master's work at the University of Florida in preservation, and got my master's in architectural preservation there in 78, a while ago.
So what first interested you in architecture?
You know, I'm not sure I can answer that one exactly, but I know when I was 11, I decided I was going to be an architect. I'm not sure where that came from exactly, but I lived in a small town along the Erie Canal in New York, uh-huh. And the architecture was, you know, quite stunning in the small town, all from about, you know, the early 1800s and up. And I lived just a couple blocks away from the Capitol Square, County Seat Capitol mm-hmm. Square, which was a beautiful capital, and nine very gracious historic churches that surrounded it. I think that might have been the inspiration. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I'd be in preservation at that time, but I liked old buildings. So, and then I think the inspiration for preservation really came maybe from a couple courses when I was at Kent, and then when I spent mm-hmm. time in Italy, I spent a couple weeks in Bologna, which at the time was the center for preservation in Europe, and I really got interested in what they were doing. It was sort of the ideal communist city, and they were doing whole blocks of rehab at a time, move everybody out, and then move them back in, but under the same rent as they left, because it was rent controls. And it was really cool. I mean, it was really a very socialist idea, but they were doing really neat things. I liked it, and I actually went to graduate school at Florida. I had applied before that for history. I was going to be a history professor mm-hmm. in an architecture school. That's really what I wanted. And after one quarter at Florida, I said, hey, I like history, but I think I really like preservation because I could just take one course. So I switched and then just did a minor in history and did my major in preservation. So, and from there, it just kind of took off.
Very cool. How did you get involved with working for the state?
Well, actually, I worked at FLAD's office here in Madison for 9 years, doing mostly laboratory facilities like in Chicago, Miami, and stuff. And through that, I'd met a lot of people at Affiliate Engineers, which was the partner engineering firm. And a couple of the engineers had left over the years, mm-hmm. several architects had left. But anyway, I got a call one day from an engineer who had moved, if you will, to the state. Mm-hmm. He says, hey, how would you like to work on the state capitol? I said, right, you know. He says, no, really, would you be willing to? I said, I'll be willing to come in and talk to you about it. So I came in, he says, well, you know, in a couple of years, we're going to tackle a long-term project and this and that. And I said, well, you know, I'm not really sure I want to work for the state. I didn't have a negative connotation, but I was happy where I was. So we didn't work out anything. But then he called me about a year later and said, hey, it's going to start. If you want to do this, now's the time. So I said, you know, I guess I'm interested. And I started out working on several small projects for the state. And then eventually they let me start working on the Capitol right when we started, actually, mm-hmm. in 1987. And was fortunate. So that's why I went to work for the state. And as the project ended, that's kind of why I left, because I just went there to do that.
Just focus on the Capitol. And how did you find the Capitol project?
Well, I mean, again, they had found me, because mm-hmm. I had worked on when I was in graduate school, I worked at the Capitol of Florida.
Oh,
and they
okay.
were doing the work. They had just built a new Capitol, and they were going to save part of the historic Capitol. Mm-hmm. I worked there for a preservation architect from Jacksonville. And so I had some experience in Capitols. Uh-huh. I knew a little bit to be dangerous. But this friend of mine knew I liked preservation, although I was doing lab work for FLAD. He knew that my desire was really to do, you know, preservation. Because
yeah.
I was doing some of that on the side. And so that all kind of worked out. And then as my position changed at DFD, you know, I started out as just sort of a regular architect. And as people left, I was able to move up a bit. Mm-hmm. And when I left, I was, you know, essentially capital architect, which was fun, and I really enjoyed that. It was kind of nice just doing drawings on the first project and on the second being project manager. And by the time we we did the rotunda, being, you know, in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And being in charge was a lot less fun than drawing, but but it was good. And I'm glad we did it, you know, in the way we did it, where we did a wing at a time or a major project. And that worked out good. And we were smart enough to, I think we visited 8 or 9 other capitals while we were doing ours and learned what not to do from them. And that was probably the key thing, what not to do. Don't do this, it's a crazy way to do it. So, and I think it all turned out well, and we had a great leader and the governor essentially being there for almost the entire project.
Yeah.
Otherwise it would have never happened the way it did too. So
yeah.
The money was there, and he was passionate about that project. Anytime we take him on a tour, he just got so into it that you know, he could hardly believe it. And we get criticized sometimes by his staff, you know, and say, "No, you just took him on a 45-minute tour. We can't get 5 minutes of his day. Will you please cut this out?" But that, and it was good because he was a real supporter of it.
That's excellent. Could you sort of give a time frame for the time that you were with Division of Facilities?
Sure. I think I started there in July of 87.
Mm-hmm.
I left in August of 98.
Okay.
So that was the time. And again, I started out, I was just a regular architect and gradually worked my way up to assistant state chief architect and then capital architect. And it sort of just was a natural progression of people left and there was opportunities.
And so that was also a time that fundamentally overlaps with the Red Gym.
Right, and what was nice about it is in the first few years, since I was really just an architect there, I had to do other things besides work on the Capitol. I did stuff at Door County, I did stuff in Villa Louis. And in the midst there, that's when the Red Gym started to come to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And we had joked for many years because we were working on sort of a master plan in our minds, at least at the time, for the State Historical Society. And the Red Gym was, you know, well underutilized. We thought, gee, it'd be a great place for the society, you know, for the preservation division or something.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the university was dreaming up what they wanted to do with it, and they had, you know, Mary had started her campaign, so to speak, to get it going, and was running up against a lot of stone walls at DOA or in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, you know, done some drawings and had started it. So yeah, I was involved on the periphery at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And I was working on some stuff for the union next door. And so Ted Crabb was interested in the Red Gym because, you know, maybe linking them together. And so. I don't remember what year, right, but I would guess that had to be in like 89 or somewhere in there that it started to really come to the surface. Does that sound about right?
It was about that they started a committee pretty much right off the bat as soon as Shalala came.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 88. 87, 88. Actually, so let's talk a little bit more about just the Red Gym specifically. When did you first hear about the project to transform the Red Gym into the Student Service Center?
I don't know if I could tell you the date, but I remember it was I think I was up at campus planning at the time, and they had a couple of drawings that Chris, yeah, had done. And they were kind of neat, and but he had showed, like, you know, removing some floors or something, which didn't seem to be the greatest idea, but we understood what the drawings meant. It was just a way to get people interested in the project. So that might have been, again, in 89 or early 90 that I actually saw those drawings, and that's when we started jokingly saying, well, this would be a great place for schools because they're cramped where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first hearing about it, and then it, as it started to get further out of the university and out of their, you know, planning things and become a more of a real project. I think when I first heard of it, when it came through DOA and one of the early budget things, it was like $17 million. And everybody said, this is no way. We're going to spend $17 million, whatever, on that building. It's not going to happen. And there was a lot of pressure to tear the building down several times in its history, you know, especially when the Wisconsin Center was first built. And then when they realized they were going to expand the Wisconsin Center into, what's it called now?
The Pyle Center.
The Pyle Center, yeah. You know, the Red Gym seemed doomed, and I think DOA sort of said, well, maybe it is doomed. But I don't think they were saying the project couldn't go ahead. I just think they were saying they weren't willing to spend $17 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the end, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think in the end, they only funded it for 9 or 10, and then Mary raised the difference, the other million or two or something herself. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
she raised
something like that, right?
She raised quite a bit, at least $5.5 million.
So yeah, I mean, we do, and it only funded five. I mean, yeah. Seven. So, yeah, it was underfunded even with what Mary could get together. So. Mm-hmm. But and that sort of was the trend right then, about 1990s, when all the campuses were asked to bring in gift money into their projects. You know, business school, pharmacy, all those schools were starting to say, you know, the legislature would say, we'd love your project, but this is as far as we're willing to come, $20 million. If it's $30 million, you got to come up with the other 10. And of course, as groups did that, well, then they just played into the legislature's hands. Then it just kept going. And that's kind of the operation that we have today. So you want that? Well, great, but you're going to have to. The Historic Society wants to build the new History Center. Mm-hmm. And the governor, I mean, it was his pet project, but he was only willing to fund about half of it, so mm-hmm. they'd have to come up with another 10, 20 million themselves. So. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that was the greatest evolution, but it did come out that way. So.
Yeah. What was your initial reaction to the idea, the drawings that you saw?
I thought the idea to reuse the red gym was a good idea. I didn't particularly like what I saw in the drawings, but I think I realized that it was just drawings, just to mm-hmm. get people interested. I don't think Chris intended that his drawings be done exactly. Because I think then they were still toying with the idea of what exactly should be in the red gym, what makes the best use. Mm-hmm. I think Mary had a clear vision that it would be that gateway. She always mentioned that gateway to campus, and it should be the place where you come. You know, it's so easy to identify to somebody. Just look for the red gym.
Yeah.
Well, what's it look like? You can't miss it, you know, tourists. It has it's really a neat style that's very definable versus some of the nondescript buildings in the lower campus, which you would have a tough time telling people mm-hmm. to look for. So I thought it was good that she wanted to reuse it. I thought it was good that they had some concepts. But I think we told her very early in the game that DOA isn't going to go for it unless you can map out that this building's worth spending any money on, let alone mm-hmm. 16 or whatever they were planning to spend. And that's when we came up with the idea that you know, maybe we should get the legislature to approve a historic structure report, because we'd only done a couple small ones mm-hmm. for, we did one for the Brisbois House at Villa Louis, we did one for Fish Hatchery in Bayfield, and those have gone over okay with DOA.
Uh-huh.
I mean, basically they were facilities reports which they had seen hundreds of before, but we included a history component. And we were trying to sell the idea that history was a part of why some buildings should be saved, mm-hmm. and that a campus like that campus should have at least 10 or 12 buildings that should be saved at all costs, and maybe some that are marginal and some that we really pretty much care about. Coming up with that list was never easy as to
yeah.
what those were, but I think that was sort of an unspoken thing. There are some here that, yes, we all will stand from the bulldozer for. I think the Red Gym was one of those, as long as it could become economically doable.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was always the bottom line, you know, I think, for the legislature of the DOA. Is it doable? Is it fundable? Is it worth spending that kind of money?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the legislature was tired of having people come in and say, I need $10 million, and then actually by the time it was done, it was $20
million. Yeah.
And that's what the other part of the historic structure report was supposed to do, is identify early, before you got into a budget process, what the project would cost mm-hmm. and why it would cost that much. Because typically we got into an older building and you know, we'd had some success, like at Stevens Point with Main Hall,
mm-hmm.
which had been earlier, maybe in the late 80s, and had been remodeled, you know, and it cost many more times than they wanted to spend
mm-hmm.
or anticipated spending, because they didn't know enough about the building before they started. They were very naive that, well, we can remodel this for $20 a square foot. No, nobody could do that. And so the idea to do a historic structure report, I think, appeased some of the legislators and DOA, because I think they felt that when we did it, we would find out it was going to cost $20 million, and that would definitely be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of why the idea got started, mm-hmm. as I recall. And it wasn't an easy task. I mean, it took us a while to convince the legislature and the building commission to spend $200,000 on a study for a project that may never go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But we assured them if they spent $200,000 up front, they would save it at the back end
mm-hmm.
in change orders. And because if you knew the building, then you would come out of there with a reasonable budget instead of an unrealistic budget. And actually, they bought that idea.
Yeah.
Which was surprising. But we got it past the building commission. They funded it as a standalone thing and said, well, go do it. And in fact, I couldn't find the article, but in one of the AIA magazines, I think from 91, I wrote an article about it. So this is a big day. Mm-hmm. This is a big thing, guys. Don't let this go unnoticed. And I think it was nice to have that set a pattern for later mm-hmm. stuff. So.
Because they later did one for Lathrop Paul too. Didn't they?
We did Lathrop Paul. We actually did. We're doing a huge one for the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
I think that. I shouldn't say that. I believe that one will get done for the Historic Society's own building before it comes into a main project, for the same reasons that you really should know what you're going to do and why you're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of historic structure reports in this office, and I think they always pay for themselves in the end for an owner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it just makes it clear to them what they have to do and what it's going to cost, it's good. And a lot of times now, the historic structure reports are the basis for going after grant money, because the grantor sees that you guys have studied it out and know what you want to do, and now we know what the costs are. Mm-hmm. The Getty is one who likes to see those done, or the Jeffers Family
yeah.
Foundation
mm-hmm.
really likes to see historic sector reports get done. So I think it helped by having a very visible project have one done.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't easy to sell that $200,000. I mean, we battled.
Yeah.
You know, but we did get it done. I mean, it was fortunate. We had the right people on the building commission at the time.
Why hadn't they really done a lot of HSRs before that?
Well, I don't think there was many people in DOA who really cared too much about historic buildings. I sort of brought that in a little
mm-hmm.
bit, and then we followed it with a few more people like myself. You know, DOA was quite different back in the 70s and early 80s. They were designing a lot of buildings. They actually designed, they weren't mm-hmm. just managing projects, they actually designed.
Uh-huh.
So they weren't interested in it. You know, let's build new buildings. So,
I
think the campuses show that. If you look across the state system on the campuses, you look in the 60s, 70s, there's just a ton of buildings that they cranked out. But by the time we got to the 80s and 90s, it's been a lot more reuse, and some good, some bad.
Mm-hmm.
South Hall River Falls was just before the Red Gym too, and that was one that was sort of mediocre, but it was a classic example, and I think it's the reason. I don't know the timing, but I think it's part of the reason we got the legislator to buy the historic structure report idea, because that building had been pegged $8 million or something. I think we ended up spending 9 or 10 because we
mm-hmm.
just didn't know enough about it when we started.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know enough, and you know, the architect got into it and realized it was much more of a problem than anybody thought. So, lesson learned, and as a result, I think we got some real stuff.
Were there disadvantages to having an HSR done?
I don't think so. No, I don't think there was at all. And I don't think there is on any building other than, as an owner, you have to come up with some cash before you actually know there'd be a project. So there is a risk that, you know, you could spend some money and actually have to tear down the building. But I don't think I've found an HSR yet that's happened to. There might be one somewhere in the Park
uh-huh.
Service or something. But typically, you do it because you've got a gut feeling that it's going to work out. You know, and in the case of the Red Gym, I think not only did it tell them, you know, what the costs were going to be, but I think it also protected the spaces that wanted to be protected. It prevented the university from cutting a hole in the floor where there shouldn't be a hole in the floor, or
uh-huh.
filling in a space where there shouldn't be filling in a space. And I think that's good too, because I think the building got reused in a sensible way, and therefore was cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that. So I think that was a benefit.
How did, and DFD, you said, had to be sold on a historic structures report, but what was their overall view by the end?
I think as far as the Red Gym was concerned, they were relatively satisfied. The unfortunate part about that project is that we didn't hire the same architects to do the design as we did to do the historic structure report.
Uh-huh.
I think we learned that lesson, but that was an absolute mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Because the new team had to have a big learning curve, and as a result, we ran into some big code issues that we thought had been solved.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, the Red Gym project's still not closed down, because there's still some code issues that the code people won't sign off on until they make some small changes. And that's been done for a while, but it's not closed out. So there was that learning piece that came along, and I think that was a good learning piece. That
mm-hmm.
you really should stick with the same team,
mm-hmm.
So you don't have to relearn whatever it is that you did learn in the HSR. So I think overall they're believers when it's appropriate. I think it's harder to sell them on a smaller job. But on some of the bigger ones, like I said, I think when when this one comes up, for the State Historic Society building, which will be a big project. I think they'll do that. I think if they ever did Bascom, I'm sure they do it there. Maybe Science Hall, yeah, which is probably not too far off in the future. Unfortunately, the university's mucked that one up pretty seriously on the inside. So,
yeah,
you know, a historic structure part at least could document what it had looked like. Mm-hmm. So I think the university, again, would embrace it if it's going to help their cause. Mm-hmm. If it's not, then they won't. Mm-hmm. And certainly they won't want to see a historic structure report for the nurse's dorm, because it would say save it, and it's in their way, so mm-hmm. they don't want it then. But and that's not just this campus. I mean, that sort of applies to any campus. Mm-hmm. But I think the state has some value in it. I mean, you have to realize now all the leaders that were there at the time when we were all developing this belief are gone, so we have to re-educate some of them. The DFD has a new administrator, DOA has a new, you know, secretary. It's completely new, so you have to sort of re-educate.
The legislature's turned over a bit.
Yeah, we lost some of the best preservation supporters in the legislature. Senator Rood's gone. Yeah. Luckily, Brian Burke's still there. Senator Risser, but they'll be gone at some point, too.
Yeah.
So it's a constant education. I think the fact that many more historic structure reports are getting done on smaller projects across the state that are not state-owned is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think that puts a little pressure on state government to at least be as wise as private people are. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Yeah, I think that's a good thing. I mean, the Park Service has been using historic structure reports since the 50s.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For the Wisconsin not to dream into it until the 90s is kind of sort of sad, but in any case.
You've already mentioned that you became interested in historic preservation fairly early on.
Oh yeah.
Can you describe your personal philosophy regarding preservation and adaptive use?
I think we should save the buildings that are worth saving and get rid of the ones that aren't. I mean, there's a lot of great buildings that should be saved, certainly Regent, Capitol. And you know, I think we need to look at each one on an individual basis too. Because there are a lot of old buildings that just aren't worth saving, that aren't structurally intact. I feel for the people in Seattle where their downtown historic district just got wrecked pretty heavily.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I you got to be a realist that without proper earthquake protection, a lot of people could get killed. So, you know, you have to balance those things. It's a balancing act. That's what I look at. Mm-hmm. You have to balance the needs of what people need versus what the building can provide you. But I would say more times than not, it's better to save the older buildings. I like the philosophy that we don't have to put on the landfill,
yeah,
that kind of thing. You know, unfortunately, a lot of older buildings have hazardous materials that have to be removed, and that does hurt them in a sense that that's a penalty they pay. Mm. But generally, I'm a real believer in it. I can't say every building I would stand in front of a bulldozer, but a lot. And I think the best preservation projects are the ones that have a reasonable building, at least of a good, above marginal quality, and have a grassroots effort to save them or to reuse them or whatever. Because if it comes from the top down, it usually doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if it comes from the bottom up, in preservation, it usually works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's good. You got to find somebody who really believes in this particular building. A good example would be the Lorraine Hotel. I'm familiar with that building. On West Washington Avenue, right near the Capitol. Tall brick.
Oh, yes. Yep. Yes. Okay.
That is a state office building. It has been for 20-some years. Well, it's going to be sold to a private developer. In fact, it was sold to a private developer because all those occupants are moving to the new Justice Center on the square.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, and this guy from Chicago, young guy, he's about 35, he decided that let's make this back into a hotel. Now that's a really marginal building because it's very low floor-to-floor heights. It has some really significant exterior problems.
Mm-hmm.
It has an outdated mechanical electrical system. It has like five different levels in the first, what we call the first level, like, from accessibility point of view, it's a nightmare. But he's got a vision. He thinks he can do it. And now he's going to use the tax credit program, which is going to help reduce that burden that sometimes an old building has. And I think he's got a great concept. He's just finished a study to see how many hotel rooms should be there, and the top floors are going to be condos, and We're going to restore the lobbies. We're going to restore the old ballroom, which is now has a ceiling at about 8 feet across to about a 30-foot space with this beautiful decorative ceiling. It's still there, but covered up. And there was a two-story dining room called the Pompeii Room that's been overfloored. Actually, a steel floor. We're going to remove that, put back this grand Pompeii Room. So, but he's got vision, and he's got at least a decent building. We're going to take two levels that are now in basement to parking. So, but that's what you need. Somebody who's willing to take a little risk, knows how to work the system to get tax credits or TIF financing or something, and then move ahead. So, and those are the kind of things projects should move ahead. That are good. And Madison's a tough sell sometimes in preservation. There's some great groups, Historic Madison. There's a group here on the east side. I can't think of the name at the moment, but that does good stuff. But it's not the easiest sell.
No.
For Madison, I know when we interviewed for the project to quote unquote restore the pavilion at Olin Park.
Uh-huh.
They didn't really want to restore it. They just wanted to fix it up and get out of there, So they were trying to appease preservationists, but and they hired somebody to do it. And I think they did a decent job, but it was a restoration.
Obviously, you're in architecture and in private practice now, not working for the state. How frequently do you try to do preservation?
Our office, this firm of 18 people today, our practice is exclusively deals with older buildings. Qualified out of it, but we have worked in the Midwest and have worked on Wisconsin Capitol, Idaho Capitol, Kansas Capitol, some large buildings, and yet we're doing some small houses too, tax credit projects actually. Mm-hmm. So we do a wide gamut of stuff, a lighthouse in Door County, a church in New Glarus, wide range, but just about exclusively with older buildings. Not all of them are significant or historic, but they tend to be older buildings, and Lorraine Hotel would be another one. We also do maybe 10% of our work is new buildings, but they tend to be in a historic context.
Okay.
You familiar with the Ken Kopp site?
Yeah.
And we're doing the design for that site that tries to respect urbanism and stuff, and isn't just like, a big parking lot with a Walgreens sign, which got turned down. So that's the kind of design we do in a new situation. Mm-hmm. Or maybe an infill building, somewhere on the east side or State Street if a building burned out or something. I think that'd be a neat challenge for us, because that's the kind of focus we have. So that's what we do, and that's what our staff is trained to do, and we're a very non-traditional architectural firm, and most architectural firms just do architecture and have a pretty broad practice, maybe this week to build in a Kmart and next week to build in a hospital or something. I mean, I'm probably getting a little wacky there, but it's pretty true that they're usually pretty diverse. We are very focused. We kind of try to stay in our niche in the market, if you will, and I think that's worked well for us. We have our own in-house historians and researchers and graduate students who just focus on that stuff. And the employees we've been able to attract are typically at least experienced in preservation, if not trained in preservation. So, and that's been really good. We've had a good attack on it, and I think our collaborative nature of our office is really unique, and I think it's been a great selling point. And we're able to do anything, between a large and a small project. A lot of firms get to the point where they can only do large projects because of overhead costs and stuff. And we're fortunate that we can still do a residence for somebody in a preservation type thing or a small thing. We're doing a couple of train stations now, from turn of the century, which are fun, but they tend to be pretty small projects. Uh-huh. But still, we enjoy them. We've adapted to be able to do a variety of those projects. We also are non-traditional in the sense that because preservation demands many more disciplines than normal architecture, it's much more related to interdisciplinary efforts. Mm-hmm. We got everybody from conservators to archaeologists to material specialists that you don't really get into in traditional architecture practice. We have to be much more partner-oriented. We have to be good team players, good partners. Mm-hmm. Right now we're partnering with a firm from Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut, a firm from Lawrence, Kansas, a firm from Boise, Idaho, one from Springfield, Illinois, and that's kind of neat, one from Indianapolis. That's what we need to be able to do and deliver the kind of products that, that we do.
Excellent.
And that's the way preservation is. And we're probably the only firm in this state that practices that way. If you go out east, there's a lot of them. But mm-hmm. I think in Wisconsin, we're the only one. There's a few who do preservation, but they also do a lot of other things. We're mm-hmm. the only one that are pretty much focused on it. And that's good and bad. Because mm-hmm. it's harder for us to go after a newer project, even if it's sort of preservation related. Because people think, oh, you guys only deal with old buildings. And you have to dispel that rumor and say, well, we really like the urban environment related to old buildings. Or I could even see us doing they're talking about a new visitor center at Old World, Wisconsin. For instance. I think that would be a challenge, because what would you do, a contemporary building or something that is from 1870? I don't know. But that's the kind of, I think, design challenge we'd want. Yeah. We wouldn't want to do a Kmart or anything like that, I don't think. I think we'd like to do some stuff in a couple of the new urban, the new suburban urban things. That uh-huh. You know what I mean? The one in Middleton, it's Milton Hills, mm-hmm. new urbanism sort of thing. And there's one coming up out on the Madison's far west side called Midtown Commons. And I think we do a building or two there because they're going to be very high density. Hopefully some type of design to them, not just strip centers. And I think most of those don't have parking in front mm-hmm. of, you know, they're somehow tucked behind. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So cool. Well,
and we depend a lot on historians. I mean, we have to have, we have several history majors working here. And has an interest in architecture.
Send you my resume.
Do it, really. we're looking for another person, actually. But that's a combination that's not too much out there. And if it is, it's usually found in government. You'd find that it's the State Historic Society or Illinois Historic Preservation Office. You would not find it in private practice, so it's harder for us to find those people. But I think, you know, we've been able to find some really young people, and that's good because they can grow up as we grow up, mm-hmm. being 3 years old and considering ourselves to be slightly past being toddlers in the profession. You know, we have all that adolescence to go through yet.
Yeah. I'd like to, I could talk about this all day, but at the end of March in 1995, DFT put forward a proposal to State Building Commission for an alternate use of the Red Gym, one that located the State Historical Society stacks there, mm-hmm. as well as some distance learning for the Wisconsin Center, the Pyle Center. And it came at a time when they were seeking final approval for inclusion in the 95 biennium budget. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit of the decision-making that went into that proposal by DFD?
You know, I don't recall it at all. It's funny, I should, but I don't remember. I remember the sort of the battles that occurred in the budget mm-hmm. process, but I really don't remember this specifically, probably because I wasn't involved with that issue. Mm-hmm. I was probably on the other side saying, hey, we've got a great project here, let's push it ahead and let's move it. And my only guess is that, you know, the analysts at DOA looked at it and felt that the people who were being proposed to be to move in there under Mary's plan didn't necessarily need new space, mm-hmm. but they were fine just where they were. And the greatest need, in a sense, in that area of campus was the Historical Society needing more stack space. So mm-hmm. that's probably, I'm going to guess, where it came from. Because mm-hmm. they really look at it as black and white. They really don't worry about what the campus necessarily says they want or what historic says they need. It's, well, we see it as this, and uh-huh. they sort of have that very isolated view. Uh-huh. And that's good and bad, of course. So, but I don't recall that much more than that. Sorry, I'm just...
That's all right.
Maybe I just tried to block it out. I do remember the budget battle at that time.
Actually, could you talk about the budget a little bit?
For the building?
For the building and...
Well, I thought that when the... and I was going to look through here today, and I didn't have a chance to look through the report, but as I recall, when we were going through the process, we came up initially with a pretty high budget. Mm-hmm. But it included some things that a lot of people wanted but weren't willing to fight for. You know, mm-hmm. And Mary could only fight for so much. We had envisioned when the historic structure report was done that the parking between the Red Gym and the union would disappear. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and that was a dream, but we thought it was a great dream because it would finish Arimoth, or finish that right to the lake, which would be a great thing. And we talked about an underground connection between the Union and the Red Gym. Mm-hmm. In fact, we had partially designed one, at least it cost it, because we thought it'd be a great thing. And maybe you could have skylights, could be wide enough so it wasn't just a corridor, but maybe a place that students could have something going on. And Ted liked that. He liked the idea that it'd be connected so that food service could work and all these things, and kids wouldn't have to go outside. And I don't think he objected to the fact that parking would disappear. Also, we realized we'd need a way to get into the service to both buildings, and that didn't seem unrealistic. But I think the parking people felt, you know, that's just not going to work. We said, all we really need here is 5 or 10 spaces of 20-minute limit so somebody can come in and get what they need and directions in the Red Gym and then hit the trail, go where they're going, you know. Mm-hmm. And that got nowhere. But I think the reason it didn't is because, you know, they've always had that plan, I shouldn't say always, but recently had that plan to build a parking garage under Library Mall. Mm-hmm. And I think they thought once that's done, then we'll give up those 30 spaces in Lot 1. So, and you know, that still could happen. The cost for that would be gigantic. But that still could happen if some donor came along and have their name on a parking garage. I think when we did that, we came up with a pretty high budget. And then we had to get real and say, okay. And actually, I recall, too, that we couldn't get all the space Mary really envisioned in the building. It just didn't fit. That's why Chris and some of his schemes had put in some overfloors, added some floors to get the space. But we had proposed at one point, and I think it talks about it in here, to rebuild the boathouse. Mm-hmm. To get another 10,000 square feet. And then it was, well, who's going to be in there, you know? But anyway, and the cost to rebuild it wasn't huge. The process was difficult, both through DNR and all that. But I'm not sure it got in here in the final version or not, but we did have that in. And then I think we got, you know, we had to get very realistic if we wanted a project to move ahead and came up with a budget. But I think we all realized it wasn't enough to do what really needed to be done to the exterior or to the interior. But it was adequate. It was, you know, good enough. And then, of course, when budgets get to DOA, they look at it and say, okay, well, you guys want $15 million, you'll take $7 million. You know, that's all there is this year or something. They have some reason for just giving you whatever. So you've got two choices. Give up, which Mary was not about to do, or you go and find some donors. And she hit the trail and went out to California and other places and came back with a substantial amount of money. And she had done her homework well enough to know how you get grants. And she made sure the building got on the National Landmark so that she could get a good grant. You know, she did her homework and was surrounded by people who knew enough to tell her all that. And so I think she probably got, I'd have to say she's at least 90% happy with the way it turned out, but what she got. We didn't get everybody in that we wanted to get in, but those that did get in got pretty nice space. And we just had our consultant here from Connecticut, and I just drove in. I says, I gotta stay with the car. Go in, and just when you walk in the front door, just check out this old gun room that I drove over. And he actually wound up for like 10 minutes walking through the whole building. He says, I just couldn't leave. It was too great to see him.
Excellent.
He really enjoyed it. And he says, this is a really nice reuse, and it's obviously you've left the pieces that really reflect what this building was about there. And I think in the back, I hadn't been in the back part, you know, that's the conference room now where the pool was, but he said there's a picture hanging up the pool the way it used to be, and he really got a charge out of that. So he really enjoyed it, and he's a very good preservation person too. So I think having his input there was kind of neat. We just happened to drive in there. We were looking at another project on campus. So I think we got most of what Mary wanted. We didn't get it all, but that's pretty typical, unless you're in the private sector where somebody just has, the Frouchies have enough money to fund $100 million or more of something. So the state is very, you know, budget conscious. Because if you turn in 10 projects for $100 million and that was only going to be 10 projects and they can find a way to get an 11th project out of that, the legislature wins, right? Because they got one more project and the budget didn't go up. Somehow everybody got a little bit less, but everybody found some money somewhere or gave something up that they really didn't need. Because I think that's usually the case too on any building. After it's programmed, you could probably cut 10% out, really not hurt anybody, probably. If you're fortunate enough to get 100% grant. And I think, unfortunately, the game is played that way. between the campus and DOA. Well, we'll ask for 300% because we know we're only going to get 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate, but even when the campus might be honest about it, DOA still cuts it, so, because they think they only need 80% of what they ask for. So I think the campus, or any institution, it's not just the campus, I mean, corrections or HNSS does the same thing. You got to ask for more than what you need because you're not going to get what you ask for anyway.
Yeah.
So.
I guess for an overall thought, what do you say is the value of historic preservation and adaptive use for large institutions like universities or other state agencies?
Well, you know, I was impressed recently. Maybe it's a copy of someone. I can see if I can find it for you. But there's a house in the center of campus at Oshkosh. Mm-hmm. If you've been to Oshkosh's campus, it's loosely a campus.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of buildings sort of strung together. But right in the middle, there's a house by a relatively well-known Wisconsin architect named Waters. It's not his best house, but it's a nice house. And it's virtually intact. And it's used by a couple student organizations right now. I was just in there a couple weeks ago. And the campus has been trying to tear down this house forever. It's in their way. This would make 20 more parking spaces. Let's get this baby out of here. Well, the local people got it listed in the National Register. And that scared the campus enough that they've said, okay, I guess we got to do something with this. But a new chancellor took over maybe a year ago. And a few months ago, he wrote a letter to the community. This is unheard of in Wisconsin, I think. Mm-hmm. He wrote a letter to the community saying, it's our duty to save this house.
Okay.
It's part of what our mission is as a university, as a public institution.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to get a copy of this letter.
I would love to.
And it's great. That's the reason I went up to see the house, because
mm-hmm.
I saw his letter and I called the project manager and said, I want to meet this guy, because how's he got the guts to say this? Because there's no other chancellor I know is going to say anything
mm-hmm.
like that. But I think that's what it is about. I think he was right. I think it's the duty of this university to save not just buildings, but views and landscape features that are important parts of that campus, archaeological sites that exist on that campus and stuff. And that doesn't mean save every building, but back in the mid-80s, they did a book called Perspectives of a University,
yeah.
And in that they ranked what they felt at the time were the best buildings and the sort of the mediocre and whatever. And I think that still holds pretty true today.
Mm-hmm.
Although the buildings that aren't mentioned in it are the ones that are probably the most threatened
mm-hmm.
and probably where my greatest fear about preservation is. I think people can relate to going to the Capitol and looking at, oh, yeah, we got to
yeah.
save that. Or I can look at Science Hall or the Red Gym or basketball and say, yeah, okay, I agree with you. Great building. We should at least try to save it. But they're going to look at some of the more modern buildings. I don't know if I can pick one out on this campus, but let me think of one if I can. Maybe Steinbach Library.
Yeah.
And in 20 years, they say, this thing's got to go. And actually, by then, maybe it'll achieve landmark status, because that is a unique building. It is a nice design. It's kind of close to us in time, but we don't have
mm-hmm.
an appreciation for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if there's another one on this campus that's really unique.
Fred Hall actually is threatened.
Which one
it's
is
a,
that?
It's 50s E.B. Fred. It's
yeah.
50s. It's across the street from Steinbach. Corner of
Babcock and
Egg is right here. And then it's right on the corner.
Sure. Yeah, I would guess any 50s building. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's too close to us in time. They're ugly buildings by most people's taste. But they have to realize that some of those are worth saving. Not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them are. And it's much more difficult to save a building like that than it is to save a Red Gym. Red Gym's got brick walls that are 2 feet thick. It's got massive steel trusses holding up. That 50s building was built to last 5 minutes, and of course it's 5 minutes are up. And to preserve a curtain wall in a building like that, or a thin brick wall that just weren't meant to last, that wasn't the vision architects had, just get this baby up and get it built, is really difficult. And a lot more people are talking about those kind of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the Park Service many years ago arbitrarily picked 50 years. You gotta be that old to be on the National Register. Very arbitrarily, and I think they got to look at that and say there are some buildings that are not 50 years old yet that we better save. I was trying to think of one on this campus, and I can't. There's one at River Falls, a classic 50s building, curtain wall glass, stone trim. They'll obliterate it before it goes, and it's got some huge problems, but it's such an icon of the 50s. You know, they don't all have to look like 1800 or 1900 to be important buildings.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the battle in preservation now, that ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose on this campus that'll be part of the issue. The key thing, I think, for any public institution is to really have that view of that. We are stewards of not just the students here. That's our mission, but we are also students of the environment we've built. That's the agricultural dean's residence. This is a nice example of what the university can do if they really want to do something. They've done a nice job with that, you know. I think, you know, they poured a bunch of money into the observatory a few years ago. I think they're looking at expanding, what is it, human ecology now, that building.
Yeah.
Hopefully in a pretty sensitive way, because that's a nice building. It's the only one that's got a big front lawn, besides basketball. So I think they do have a duty and a responsibility. And I think, you know, it has to start sort of at the Board of Regents. They have to believe that, but they've got to have a campus planner for this too. I'm not sure they do now, but they will. They did in the past. Sort of the one that's there now, maybe not, but it'll come around again. Mm-hmm. If you get a few more chancellors like the guy at Oshkosh willing to say that. The dichotomy there is that the chancellor at Oshkosh believes it, but he's not willing to spend his money to fix the house on it. Okay. I mean, there's a difference, but he at least said, went on record as saying, I believe it should be fixed up, and I'll help the community raise the money to fix this up, you know. And he's willing to put in some infrastructure money and some, but, and I think all he's saying is, look, I don't have the resources. Small campus, I can't spend $500,000 on this house when I got students who don't have enough dorm space, or I got a new union or construction, whatever. So I appreciated his thought, though. I think that was good. A good thought. And that'd be great if we get more to do it. But, you know, there's 10 Oshkoshes on this campus, 10 little campuses. Agriculture's got their domain, medical school's got their domain, engineering's got their domain. And the domains don't all necessarily agree on what should happen. And that's a problem, too, as it is on any big campus. But some other campuses are much more preservation-oriented, especially out east. Buildings are older. It's a little easier to Virginia. If in Illinois, if you've ever seen Illinois' campus, it looks like an Eastern college if you've ever seen it, the quadrangles and all that. It's very Eastern looking. And, they have a very sense of preservation. So yeah, I think the buildings in the 50s and 60s are going to be higher than the dorms on this campus.
Yeah.
The next big challenge, because as we see what's happening on the East Coast with dorms from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where students are saying, we want something better than this little box you gave us.
Yeah.
What can you do? And so they're sort of rehabbing a lot of these dorms, where they're making more suites and apartments, make something of two-story spaces. They're really not good for much else because they have very low floor-to-floor heights and they have almost no mechanicals. Probably had heat, now is it, right?
Well, but and I mean, also there's a big push among the student population to kind of abandon the dorms, too. More and more students are living in the private dormitories or off-campus even. So they might be faced with the idea of what to do with the dorm buildings when they are no longer serving as dorms.
Well, and I think from what we've heard, some of the reasons students do that is because they're just sick of living in the box. And when some of these Eastern schools have upgraded these dorms and provided more modern facilities, they're filled. And then another dorm is sort of empty, you know. And it'll happen here, and housing will have to deal with some of those issues as it occurs. Of course, here you've got the great lakefront dorms, which, even if they're not great, they still have a great location. Probably the nicest part of that whole campus is they left the lakefront for dorms.
Yeah.
Except for one classroom building, really, isn't it?
The very furthest.
White is the only one, isn't it? Helen C. White, the only building really on the waterfront.
Well, I'm a little bit on the
edge. All right, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, they have a...
Yeah. But they need to be.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I think that's a cool thing. So I would hope this campus would get its act together, but it's a big place. And, you know, I understand why it doesn't. I'm very sympathetic to what each chancellor, each dean faces. But when I see something like the guy at Oshkosh take a shot like that, all right, that's what we need. Now, I'm sure they sort of put a gun to his head, the locals did. But he did it. Just his wording, I don't know where he got it. Maybe, you know, it was just... Nicely worded that it's our responsibility. That got me. Hey, you're right, it is. And I think the state in general, state government, feels a responsibility like that, but only to a small degree. You know, I think there are certain buildings that, if they came before the legislature for rehab and adaptive use, would easily go through. There's other ones that would be marginally. would make it, you know. That's just, would be the way it is, I think. Mm-hmm. What's that building on, I'm trying to think, I guess it's on Lake Street between University Avenue and the University Bookstore. Is that the... it's like a curtain wall building, I can't... Peterson Building? Is that the Peterson
the
Building?
Peterson, yep.
I mean, look at that building. It's got that grill work on it, that aluminum grill work. That building's doomed, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I hope it's not, but...
Yeah. Or the extension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there is actually work of a... or talk of acquiring, I think, the property there on the corner. And that's supposedly the site for the new UHS.
It's
the health system. So.
It's that the open parking lot.
Right.
And probably also, what's
that? Wando's or
Brothers or Brothers or one of the bars.
Right, okay.
And actually, there are quite a number of student organizations that have veterans.
The vet.
Right, exactly, that block. Right. Or, you know, the humanities is another one. I mean, I think everybody would agree, probably one of the ugliest buildings you could possibly see. But you know, if that building makes it to 50 years old, it's a shoo-in to be a landmark building. Yeah. It is so expressive of its time. It's a classic brutalist building.
It
doesn't
is.
Relate to people very well, but still, you know, there's good reasons to save it. But I know that DOA and the campus both absolutely hate it. It's a maintenance headache, it's got huge problems, stones falling on it, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I understand those, but that doesn't demean what its value is to the greater culture of the U.S. Mm-hmm. If we tear all 50 buildings down, you know, we'll have to just look at them in books.
That's true. Do you have any other questions that you can think of?
If you had to pick about maybe 5 buildings on campus, you know, given unlimited funds, which ones would you
sign me up for working on them?
Yeah, let me just write a check here for my...
All right, a donor. Yeah. See, that's perfect. You're going to fit right into the plan.
But if you had, like, 5 buildings, which ones would you pick?
Wow, that'd be tough. I'm glad Lathrop got saved. It's not finished, but I think that was a nice project. So I think Lathrop... Bascom is just such a visible building. I guess, you couldn't get rid of that.
Right.
It'd have to be. And I think inside, I've been taking pretty good care of it. I haven't been in there since Mary had her office in there, but...
It's all right.
Yeah.
It could definitely use some money poured into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that they're talking about that in a few years. Certainly, the observatory, the original one, 1880, whatever, the observatory, for a lot of reasons, the telescope in it alone is unique. I guess I'd have to include most of Bascom Hill, you know, North and South Hall, the first buildings, and that. I think, although I don't think it'd be threatened, I think the Wharf Building is a nice building from its time, a very unique building. I think interesting how, you know, campus was pretty low scale, and this tower shows up, and it's the imagery of what the Alumni Foundation was about that has some intrigue to me there, you know. I think University Hospital is an unfortunate accident. It's too bad that got built. And I'm not saying aesthetically, but inside it's a disaster. Find your way around. And so there it doesn't relate to people. It looked great in plan, I bet, right?
Yeah,
and when they built it, you can't find your way around. All the hospital floors were fine. But anyway, like I said, I think humanities would be one you'd have to save. And probably, a lot of people think I'm probably crazy, but I think journalism.
Vilas,
again, another great building, reflective of its period. Many levels, no real street level entrance, so they couldn't be bombed. I mean, that building was well thought out to be sort of bomb resistant, because the bombing had just happened on campus. And, you know, it's a terrible building to find your way around it, but. It's very expressive of its time in both its use of precast and brick. So I think I'd have to say future landmark there for sure.
Mm-hmm. Especially because humanities and Vilas complement each other so nicely.
Yeah,
they sort of contrast.
Well, and you know, the atrium of humanities. That's kind of nice. I can appreciate that part, but.
Well, it's just a classic building from its period, and it faces the classic problems that buildings do of that time frame. There was an architect in Florida who did a lot of buildings very similarly, and every one of them got huge problems. Because he used the same details over and over, and they're great buildings. We're always hanging down in great Florida buildings. But, you know, just that period in time, the details weren't important. It's, how's it look? How can we make sure it doesn't, people won't like it? I think there's a couple from the 60s. I think Van Vleck might be one. The precast panels, the repetitive panels, the precast, I think that's very, again, a very expressive of it. Probably better than Van Hise. Van Hise is more elegant to build, but I think Van Vleck's more expressive of its period. You know, the big precast panels. What's the county cancer research building? Really bad.
Yeah.
That one I can't say I'd say, but I understand why it's like that. I thought that the one next to biotechnology was a great building too. I can't think of the name of it. Up the hill slightly from biotech. Real nondescript 50s building. Was it genetics? Genetics, is that right?
Yes.
You know, genetics.
It's sort of the green trim.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, everybody I talked to, this thing's got to go, it's ugly. Yeah. I said, but you know, this is a perfect building from its time. Mm-hmm. It has vertical shafts. It was really well thought out as a building for research. Mm-hmm. Very flexible, it's concrete frame, all this stuff. High ceilings, but it's doomed. As well as the nurse's dorm, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So I guess that'd be my small list of buildings. I probably would include the Ag Campus, like, what's the one where the artists lived there for a while? You know, that small little building next to the Stock Pavilion, that little one.
Oh, right. It's called, isn't it called the Artist House?
Yeah, a famous artist lived there.
The Artist in Residence, yeah.
For a while.
Right. Curry,
yeah, uh-huh. Right. And that little group of buildings, unfortunately, plopped some new stuff in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the Dairy Barn is certainly worthy of preservation for many reasons, but that's going to be a really hard sell. Mm-hmm. Really hard sell. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
No. I think it's great that you're doing something like this. It's really good. I think, I guess, if I could only say one thing about preservation, we just need a few more people like Mary with a vision. That's what it takes. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have the money. You just got to have the vision. Mm-hmm. And to stick with it. Because she always, what's her favorite saying? Fight the good fight. You know, she says it like 100 times a day. But that's what it was all about. She stuck with it. She didn't let anybody, you know, get her off track. She'd go to a Senate hearing and they'd sort of, you know, poo-poo her. And she just kept going. You know, that was great. And sometimes when you do that, when you're that kind of a person, you get to a hearing like that, they really are just checking out how serious you really are. Mm-hmm. They're arguing with you just to see if you really believe in what you believe in. She convinced them. That's what it's going to take to save the Dairy Barn.
Yeah.
If they had a Mary, it'd be slow, but it would get done. You know, I know there's this big push now to get it to be a national landmark. That's not going to mean anything to the campus.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I saw an email to her the other day on that, and Barnes again, or Barnes now.
Barnes now.
That's not what it's going to take. It's going to take a leader who's willing to put their butt on the line and go out there and talk and get it done. If the Ag Dean stood up and did that, it'd probably happen.
Yeah.
But I don't know the person, and I don't know if they're willing to do that. But that's what it's going to take, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think...
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.